This is an Enterprise Time Security podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Tommy Adebayo.
My name's Tommy. I'm known as Gadgets Boy online, and that's basically because I talk about gadgets and technology, consumer tech online in various forms. So whether it's Instagram, YouTube, my website, Twitter, etc. I also create content with another business partner who's also basically my co-content creator. We create things like advertising videos, present in advertising videos as well, do photography, videography for various brands in tech space.
One of the problems of creating content is that you've got to keep it under wraps. Everybody wants to see it early, particularly when it's gadgets. How do you approach the challenge of security of content?
When we attend what we call pre-briefs, you get to see a lot of products before the general public does. Also, the manufacturer will tell you, or the brand will tell you, there's an NDA that you have to sign and this can't go out until the embargo date or time lifts. The most important thing for us is to make sure that where we store the data is secure, so it doesn't leave the laptop, or even if it's a USB stick, it doesn't leave that USB stick. So if my co-creator was like, can you send me this quickly because I forgot to take a picture? No, you're not getting it, because anything can happen between when I send it to you and when you get it. And I don't know what level of security you have for me to be like, well, if I send it to you, is it secure when it gets to you? Because if it gets out, it leads back to me. It's very important for us to keep all the information that we get secure as much as possible.
We're both in an industry where we have to share a lot pre-production. A lot of that data is sensitive and people get really worried about it. When you're collaborating with one or two people, that's not so bad. You get to know each other over a period of time and you can talk about security. But some of these teams are 6, 7, 8, 10 people big and there are multiple companies involved. How do you deal with that?
I think that's a tough one. We even see that with big manufacturers like your Google, for example, like I was saying earlier. For Google Pixel 3, when it came out last week, it was such a disappointment in the sense that, not the device itself is a disappointment in the sense that we've already seen it before the launch event. When I got into this business 7 years ago, it was exciting to wait for a launch event because that's the reason why you tune in. You haven't seen this product before, you haven't heard anything about it before, and then when the keynote starts, you sit there attentively because you really want to get all the information that you need to get. But now, you just have to scan the web before you know it. You've already seen it before everyone else. Unfortunately, it's very difficult, especially like you said, when it involves external companies. So a company like Google might need a manufacturer based in China. If those guys aren't briefed to make sure everything's kept tight leashed, could leak basically. So before you know it, they can't do anything about it. Even though they've sat in this room with six people who they thought this is as far as it goes, it still leaks. It's very difficult.
How do you make sure when those leaks happen, the finger doesn't come back at you, that you can say to people, this is my process, this is what you gave me, this is how I protected it, I'm not the person who did it?
Fortunately, it hasn't happened to me yet, touch wood. But I know that unless you're inside the circle of how this happens and stuff, I think it's hard to know at what point this leaks. But speaking to a manufacturer a couple of years ago, off record, he said to me, look, most of the time when you get leaks is because they have to send 3D printed version out to, or CAD designs, they have to send it out to accessories manufacturers ahead so they can get the accessories done. So again, the weakest point of form of security is the human being, is the people behind it. Between when they send those designs out to the accessories guys, something happens. I think that's where the leaks really comes in, but you can't prevent what those guys do, what level of security they have, how far that information travels when it gets to them. So it's unfortunate really, but it does happen.
We're talking about this from a media perspective and a launch perspective, but it has an absolute parallel to the average business. People now are told they've got to collaborate, and not just within their company, but with partners, both suppliers and customers. If one of them was to say to you, what should we do better, what would you say to them?
In terms of security and making sure it doesn't get out, I think from my experience, what we've done before when I did something with Audi recently, for example, is the normal process that we're used to is we go to a pre-brief and during the session we get to record videos, take photos, etc. But this last one that I went to was the first time I've ever seen it, which was no phones allowed, etc. All the content you get, we'll capture it for you. On this date, then we'll send you the content out, which you can then use to do your whatever you want to do, what kind of content piece you want to create. Imagine they've invited, I don't know, there was about 10 of us that came from different outlets and different bloggers. I don't know what your security is like. So for them to keep that tight leashed works for them. And this car hasn't been seen. The only version of that's been seen is, unfortunately, they have to test drive them out and about when they put them on the wrap. So you can sort of see what it is, but you can't see the full detail. You don't know the full information. So at this point, we don't even have the press release yet. The only thing that I know about it are the specs when I went to the center and the questions that I ask. There's nothing to back it up. So even if I went online today and started going, well, the next blah, blah, blah is going to come out with this, 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 people will read it. They'll go, okay, cool. But where's the evidence?
It's all about that photo, really, isn't it?
that evidence that you were there, you saw it, and it is what I saw. But yeah, like I said, it hasn't happened to me. Fortunately, I can't really dive too much into that. For stuff that we do, we just have to make sure that it's kept really tight between us two, myself and my co-creator.
You mentioned earlier something that's interesting. If you get given it on a USB stick, you leave it on the USB stick. You don't take it off onto a computer. Because, of course, when you take it off onto the computer, you're going to have email, you're going to be doing internet. There's always that risk of the computer being attacked. How often do you find yourself having to think carefully about the level of security on your computer, changing passwords, the complexity of passwords?
Now it's become a routine. Every month the passwords get changed. They're not passwords that I come up with in terms of, oh, I'm going to put my mum's name or whatever and try and be clever. The stuff that I come up with using software that generates really strong passwords. What I also do is I don't generate password on the same computer that I'm using to change a password, if that makes sense. I wouldn't go on a website to generate a password and then go into another tab and then change password. I'll probably do the password generator using an app on my phone, and then I'd write that out manually on my laptop. So there's no link between the two in that sense. But it's all become a natural process now. At first, it was very challenging to try and remember that I've done all the processes and stuff. Also, things like generating key each and every time you log in became very annoying at one point. But you have to think back to how important it is, the end result. It's important to keep doing that. So it becomes natural over time.
It's an interesting challenge inside enterprises, not just getting users to think about a strong password, but just getting them to change a password.
That's right, yeah. And then changing it to the strong password as well. Because I remember when I used to work for an ad agency, you get a prompt every other week saying, time to change your password. It becomes very tedious to the point where you don't just change a number at the end every time. You go, oh, maybe it's, I don't know, Tobacco Docs 23. Next month, it'll be Tobacco Docs 24. That's just one layer of it. As an enterprise, you don't have to have your security guys or IT guys to make sure that even though your password is weak, there's still another layer to it.
In your talk, you were talking here earlier about this challenge in particular. And one thing you talked about was two-factor authentication isn't perhaps as secure as we think it is. Do you want to expand a bit more on that?
Initially, when I saw two-factor authentication, I thought, this is really secure. Basically, if you don't have my phone, you just can't get in. But then I thought deeply about it one day. I thought, wait, I remember when I was growing up, I used to prank my friends. I used to ring them up, pretending to be the bank and be like, could you confirm your and they used to laugh at the end of it. But thinking about it, the level of stuff you could do with that stuff is crazy. The computer scientists or hackers would call that social engineering, which is basically they can ring up your phone network and ask the right questions enough for them to give up information. Once they give up that information, they'd have access to your number, which means your number, they can then ring up another day and get something called a PAC code, which allows them to port a different number to your account, which means they then change the phone number on your account. That number is then linked to your two-factor authentication. They get another SIM card. They can put that into a different phone and get that code sent to their phone, which means they can log in freely onto your account. Once they get on that, they can then change your recovery email address and change literally the whole thing that even you don't recognize anymore. That when you then ring up someone like Google or even YouTube, I can't log in. They'll be like, well, can you prove that it's you? You then go through this circle of trying to prove that it's you, and you've been hacked. It's not worth it, especially if you're like myself. My YouTube account is only 25,000 subscribers, but I've got friends with millions of subscribers that they built over the years. Their Instagram account is where they make their money from promoting products. And imagine those guys get hacked and they lose all that. That's their livelihood gone. That's next month's rent gone, just like that.
One of the things you did say was if you're going to use two-factor authentication to your phone, have a second phone. This becomes a generational challenge, doesn't it? Having to have two phones. People have always talked about having a work phone and a home phone, but actually they never end up with a work phone and a home phone. You know, today we use our one phone for everything. Same as we use our one laptop and our tablet for both work and for home. How challenging do you think is getting people to actually think about having a second phone and just maybe keeping their old phone when they next upgrade?
Like you said, keeping your old phone can be the second phone, for one. Luckily, we have phones now that have dual SIM capability, so you can have two SIM cards in your phone as it is. Because all you need it for is to receive that text message that says, here's your code. That's all you need it for. Whether you use your old phone or you keep that SIM card spare in your wallet or whatever, so whenever you need it, just swap SIM card really quickly. The time it takes for you to do that is worth more than risking it all for your livelihood. For me, it's just do that. It doesn't take long at all. It takes a couple of seconds to take a SIM card out, pop it in, or just get a small pay-as-you-go £40 phone. Just keep it as a backup. And if you're going to be logging in, chances are you're going to be doing it at home or the office. So keep it secure somehow.
Looking forward, when you think about what you do and the challenges in securing data, what do you think your biggest challenge is going to be to keeping data safe over the next year or two?
like I said, the weakest link is always you. There will be technology advancement in the way that we secure ourselves. There's like fingerprint sensors now on phones. There's iris scanners and face unlock and stuff like that. That means that you have to be physically there over the next few years. Eventually, there will be no such thing as password. To keep yourself secure going forward, the challenges that we'll face would be you yourself. Am I using complicated password, if they're still passwords? Am I using PIN codes? That's just one of my daughter's or my friend's or my dad's birthdays. Just keep it in a way that is secure. So it's always down to you in the end. That's going to be the biggest challenge. On the flip side of that is, the more advanced technology is, the smarter hackers will get. If they really want to get into your account, they will work hard at that as well over time.
It is a battle, isn't it? The bad guys get smarter, and we sometimes, when we look around, aren't getting quite as smart as we think we are. Tommy, thank you for talking to us today.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Pleasure.